I want to thank Lois for inviting me to speak on this panel, and I know there's many, many people in this room that could give the same presentation. I'm supposed to present the practitioner's perspective, and I know for a fact... You can't hear? No? Okay. All right. So I thought you were volunteering to give your perspective. No, I know there's... I don't want to be stating the obvious to a group of colleagues that are many of whom I've known for many, many years, and I know you all know what the impact would be if we received an increased volume of kits. And I almost came without a PowerPoint because I thought it was more of a sit-down panel... question-answer session, and actually I have to ask you some questions and I have a lot of question mark on my slides. So, I increase in submissions, what would that mean, and how would a more sensitive new test modify the workflow, increase in DNA tests, what would it mean, the reporting and even the testimony might be affected. So, first question is, if we go into these really extended post-coital intervals, will our current screening method still work? The screening methods we use for semen, like alkaline phosphatase, P30, ELISA, sperm search, those strip assays, I always forget the names. So would this still work for a 7-day-old vaginal swab? And if no, would you just skip all the semen screening and you'll go straight for male quantitation? And I want to, can I have a show of hands? How many laboratories are using a male-specific quantitation right now? So that's definitely quite a few. How many of you go straight to extraction and do not even do semen screening anymore? All right. We got one. So then the question is, do you do that for all sample types, like for a bed sheet? Would you, where we do the AP mapping to find the semen stains, or only for the kit items?
Swabs.
Just the swabs. So you can't, if let's say you would switch your protocol to skip the screening, you cannot take that method offline because you still want to use it for other items like clothing or bedding, but you might change your workflow for the rape kits only. Like some labs don't do AP on kits. It's something that you need to think about, and definitely to have the male quantitation online does help you to make an informed decision on where to go next with the sample. I think, aside from the YSTR test, I think being at this meeting made it very clear to me that the extended intervals will become feasible because there are new methods out there. There's this laser microdissection that can be used on samples where sperm is old and degraded, and there are only very few. There are new, potentially really, really very useful laser capture chemistries out there that might help to get the few sperm cells more consistently recovered. Even the autosomal kits, and I think Jack already showed the data for that, have gotten more sensitive. Companies are putting secret ingredients in the buffers and adding a cycle here and there. And for example, a minifiler kit now has 30 cycles. And there were also on the research section, there were repair enzyme posters or better tags. So if the test gets more sensitive, that definitely, and we get better at recovering sperm, that definitely means we would anticipate a higher success rate on a collected vaginal swab. But I'm with Pat, do not forget the panties.
Right.
I do not know, and I'm not sure anybody knows, how many cases do get reported after the 36-hour interval that we feel is a good cutoff. So I have no idea how big the backlog would be. I have some numbers for New York City. This is just for one quarter, the third quarter of 2008, because the rape percentage has kind of stayed constant over a couple of years now. It's about 1,500 per year. So in that quarter, we did receive 375, and in our hands, 47% of the kits are negative for semen. And we use P30 ELISA to determine that. And if a kit is negative for semen, based on a serology test or ELISA test, one of the criminalist, entry-level criminalists can write up the report. If I don't do the semen test, but just to go straight for a male quant to determine male DNA is present, yes or no, it has to be a DNA-qualified staff member that has to write the report, because as soon as you have real-time DNA data, you need molecular biology, biochemistry, genetics, continuing education. You have to be an interpreting DNA analyst. So it has a potential impact on the staff structure. The 47% negative kits, what our next step then, of course, would be look at additional items such as the panties, clothing, anything that has been submitted that might have potential semen on it, tissue samples and things like that. So we already know that the fact that a kit is negative doesn't mean this doesn't wind up to be a DNA case. And 200, that's why the 176 and the 213 don't add up to 375. So that's the explanation, that's the additional evidence. We also already did, another show of hands, how many labs do WISE? Yes, I'm very happy to see that. The YSTRs already increased the number of samples that were feasible for DNA testing, because it is really, really useful in all cases where you have saliva as a biological fluid on an intimate sample, like a vaginal swab. And it also pulls up the male component. If you did the autosomal test and you have a minor male peaks, you get a nice strong Y signal if you go to WISE. So approximately 10% of the rape cases in our lab actually do go to some type of Y testing. So we already did experience an increase in samples just through this technology. The Y's are obviously limited because there's a reduced statistical significance of the haplotype, and you can't use it in CODIS. Our main goal is on a stranger case, of course, is CODIS. And then if you do have a male-to-male mixture, and it's one-to-one in the ratio, then you have a real problem with the statistics. The male-to-male mixture is something that we actually might see more of if we start collecting in extended intervals, because the chances that the victim had consensual sex, of course, increases the longer, the later we collect after the, that she had 7 days prior, maybe had something. So I think that would increase.
She could have sex before,
right,
with her partner, have the rape, and then have sex after with her partner.
Right. And
you've got mixed samples.
Yes, I think we would see more mixed samples. New York State did switch to cervical collection in the vaginal kit, in the sexual assault kits now. We don't have any data on it yet, but that also might result in having more mixed samples now. Jack mentioned that already. So now if you would, let's say, Roger already doesn't do semen testing on the vaginal swabs, and I know some private labs don't do that either. Let's say you would decide, I will skip the semen testing if I know the kit is 5 days, collected 5 days after the incident, but I'll do it on the younger ones. Like, for example, our saliva test, we have a lifespan like that, where we know if a sample is too old, we won't even try. But then you need reliable case information. And as Jack pointed out, the victim might not be able to actually supply the exact time of when the incident happened. Then do you want to make a decision? Are you going for differentializers or a non-differentializers based on the interval information that you have? That's a problem. Or would you do a different workflow if you have a stranger case versus an acquaintance case? Because if it's a stranger case and it's 7 days, and then you might say, WISE will be the only thing that work, and that doesn't work for CODIS, let's deprioritize that case and not work it. So that's why I told you I had a lot of question marks in my slideshow. And these are things that we would have to consider, but I'm looking forward to the results of the study Pat talked about. I do think it's probably coming because the technology has gotten so much more sensitive. I had been approached about semen results in court. So if you, let's say now, you have the 7-day-old kid, you find a nice profile, but you cannot confirm that this male profile actually is from sperm because you couldn't confirm the presence of sperm. Will that still be rape? Or will there be some type of very original explanation how the male DNA was deposited? I don't think it's a problem in New York City. I discussed it with some ADAs. It's very rare where that would make a difference. But I do know, I remember a discussion that we had in a different panel, and other jurisdictions definitely had an issue with that. They really felt it was very important that the criminalist can testify that semen was found, and then it would have that sexual connotation. So I'm not sure, does anybody here have experience with that? Any lawyers in the room? If there are, they're hiding, so. Because I'm already finished with my presentation because I'm looking forward to having some question and answers here. Okay, thank you.